And then it occurred to me, what luck.
Okay.
I swore a solemn
My family was really intense.
I was invited to a party.
Totally different.
And I
come from a large Irish, Italian, Catholic family.
And that gong is your clue that we are about to get story slammed. I'm Bruce Winter, joined by ex-fabulous Leah Delaney, and we do this at this time every Wednesday night on Milwaukee Public Radio, bringing you stories from ex-fabulous shows of the past, bring them back to life on the radio. These are too good to be sitting in somebody's computer hard drive for the rest of their lives. So Leah is here to bring us stories tonight on the theme of...
Family.
Oh, there's a broad topic.
Yeah.
No, I know. I can't think of any stories that would pertain to family.
Yeah, nobody has stories on their family. Oh. No one. It was hard.
I bet it was hard, yes.
Yeah, I'm really excited. You are not lying. Wednesday nights, we bring you stories from our archives from past Story Slam events that we've had. And you might be wondering what the heck that is. Well, let me tell you. We hold storytelling events where we give you a theme on a monthly basis, and we ask you, Milwaukee, to show up with a real, true, personal story based on that theme. You throw your name in the hat, and with any luck, you get up on stage to tell that story to a room of 100 to 200 strangers. Doesn't sound very appealing, but I gotta tell you, it is very exciting, and it's a very warm audience. It's a lovely affair.
And you have a new season that'll be starting up in October, correct?
Yep. Yeah, we're really excited. And, you know, we have themes for the monthly events, but you, Milwaukee, you have your opportunity to go vote for your theme. Like, maybe you look at one of the themes and you're like, you know what, Bruce, I got a story on that theme. I'm going to vote for that theme so I have an opportunity to tell my story.
There you go.
Yep, it's very easy.
I've suggested a few. We could do Sold My Soul for Rock and Roll or something like that. But, hey, you know.
You just pure gold comes out of your mouth every time you open it. That's great.
Speaking of talking to strangers, I do that for a living every night. So let's get into our first story tonight family. What do we got here? Let's narrow this down here.
Yeah, we actually have a newer story from January 2014. We have some of our events at the Times Cinema over in Washington Heights. The theme of that night was bonus, and we have Francis Adam Carr, who tells a story about his father.
I still remember being on Bradford in my mom's light blue Corolla in 2001 and her telling me that something was happening. I had no idea what it was. I was concerned with soccer practice or band or whatever it was. I was in high school. And she told me there was something going on with my dad's head. Not just his head, but his brain. And a few days later, we were all in Frederick Hospital. He had a brain tumor removed from his head. My brother Andrew didn't come. I'm still furious at him about that. A few days later, he started radiation and chemo. And he actually had his first chemo treatment on the morning of 9/11. He watched the towers fall with poison being pumped in his body to kill the tumor, or what was left of the tumor. I wish I'd made that up for dramatic effect, but it was true. And we were left with a lot of questions. We had no idea what to do. The question why came to mind. And it could have been a lot of things. He just got a cell phone recently. There's a lot of carcinogens around, but I'm pretty sure I know what it was. It was Brett Favre. When Brett Favre would decide to roll out of the pocket and throw across the field, across his body, and it would be a pick, my dad would get furious. And there's no way that any of the cells in his brain could do what they were supposed to do. Brett Favre gave my dad glioblastoma multiforme. I don't know much about the science. The question was, what do we do? And my dad worked for Reinhardt, and they were very generous lawyers. And he got involved in a protocol going on at Duke Hospital in North Carolina. Or Duke University, and he got this really advanced treatment. I still don't know any of the science of that. And he was given about 5 months, and he lived about an extra year. And that was a year that I'll be thankful for in ways that I can never express. That Christmas, he gave me all of his favorite novels, and I gave him all my favorite novels, and we read them together during that year. We planted tomato seeds, and we grew tomatoes together. And I mowed the lawn while he watched, because he wasn't supposed to mow the lawn. My family went on a Caribbean cruise, which is very unlike my family. We all hated it. But in San Juan, my dad went to the polo store there. It was very chic. And he bought a bunch of new ties. And I said, "Dad, why did you buy a bunch of new ties?" He said, "I'm going back to work." And he went back to work that summer. We went to the Brewers All-Star Game, 2002. You may remember that Richie Sexton competed in the Home Run Derby. Probably don't. The game did end in a 7-7 tie, and that's probably the only thing that people will remember. But I remember my dad jumping up in the first inning when Torrey Hunter caught that ball going over the fence. And even more than that, I remember the golf cart with Willie Mays in it and Barry Bonds, who is now tarnished in every way possible. But at that time, Willie Mays was his hero, and he was godfather to Barry Bonds, who was mine. I remember the ping pong matches we'd play in the basement of the UWM Union. I remember a particular point where it went on. You know when you're playing ping pong and you hit a shot and you just don't think it will go over, and then it does, and then the other person hits back and you're super surprised because you were supposed to win that point? We did that back and forth maybe 12 times in a row until we were laughing as hard as we could, and when the point ended, I'm pretty sure I won it. We both fell on the ground laughing, and I remember other experiences on the ground. My dad, you could just tell when he was going to get a seizure. He'd know. And he'd be convulsing on the ground, and I'd lay on top of him and wait for his body to stop shaking. And when it was done, I'd help him up, and we'd sit there together, and he'd put his hands over his face, and I'd look at the ground because there was nothing at all that either of us could say, because he was the man who was supposed to protect me from wolves and monsters and everything in the world. He died on March 3rd of 2003. He didn't want to die. I didn't want him to die. But I can't imagine being any luckier than I was to have that year with him. Thank you.
That was Mr. Adam Carr telling a very poignant story about his relationship with his father on the theme of bonus.
Mm-hmm. Not all stories have to be funny to be effective. A lot of these have humorous moments. Some are hilarious from start to finish. I can think of a few. I can't remember the names off the top of my head, but there was it a sister duo or a friends duo, two women?
The Hoffman sisters.
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
They were hilarious. But and some of these are just touching and poignant, but it's all good. And the theme I always come back to when talking about Exfabula with you, Leah, is like, this is real Milwaukee. No, wait, that's a TV show.
Yeah.
This is just
we're not
real
on Fox.
People.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
This is, you know, you can't make this stuff up.
You really can't. And those real stories are the most compelling stories is really what it comes down to. I mean, you know, I'm sure your friends would be happy to hear you talk about wizards for 2 hours, but I personally would rather hear about how your car broke down and you got rescued by a clown or something, like something, you know, whatever happened.
Right. Nobody's life is normal.
Oh, indeed. There could be something, yeah.
We all have stories, and this is a forum to share some of them.
Mm-hmm.
And let's go to the next one here.
Yeah.
It is. I looked at slugged neighbors.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know,
this
usually
is two people now, too, right?
Yeah. Yes. Actually, that's so funny. You brought that up. I was going to segue into that, but we got sidetrailed by some clowns in a car or something or sidetracked. We at Exfabula, normally we throw story slams and solos. We have different types of storytelling that we offer. You can tell a story by yourself, which is called a solo story. You can tell a story with a group of people on stage. That's called a Rashomon, which is one story told by several different perspectives. And in this case, we have a duo, which are two people on stage telling one story. But what we find with duos is that the closer that you are to that person, the better the story flows and such. So this is a mother and daughter duo.
Ooh.
Telling a story.
This ought to be good.
Yeah, yeah, this is going to be fantastic. Trust me. And it's Megan Coven and her mother, Carrie Kafka, telling their neighbor's story back in November 2010.
Okay, we made it up on the stage, which is half the battle.
I'm Carrie.
I'm Megan.
This is a story about Megan's first babysitting job and the neighbors she babysat for.
So let's go back to a time when I was about 11 years old. This is before cell phones. I know it's hard to think back that far. But I was about 11, and I decided I wanted to start making some income and talked my parents into letting me start babysitting in the neighborhood. Of course, first, because this is my mother.
We are responsible, accountable parents. We do things the right way.
Yes.
So she went to Red Cross babysitting classes.
Yes. And I learned how to do infant CPR, and I memorized the number to poison control, and I was good. So, got my certification, hung my shingle out, and started babysitting in the neighborhood. So, one day, the neighbors directly across the alley from us...
And this is the day and age when there were alleys and porches and, you know, okay.
Yeah. So the neighbors across the alley from us asked me to babysit for the very first time. This is kind of a strange family. I don't even remember their names, to tell you the truth. But I remember them being kind of strange. So I go over there, and they're going out for the evening, and they say, okay, here's our baby. The baby's... like 9 months old, maybe?
His name was Matthew, and I think he wasn't walking yet. I think he was about 9 months.
Yeah. Here's our baby. We're going out. Here's the number you can find us. All you have to do is feed the baby, burp the baby, change the baby, and put the baby to bed. Okay, no problem. So they leave, and they were kind of in a hurry going out, and they didn't really show me where everything was, you know, in the house, which was... a little strange, you know. But hey, they were raring to get out and have a good time, and I was raring to go with my certification. I was ready. So, got the baby, fed the baby, no problems. Burped the baby, no problems. It was time to change the baby to get the baby ready to go to bed. What was the baby's name again?
Matthew.
Matthew, yes. So I take the baby, Matthew, and we... go looking around the house for the, you know, the nursery. And this was strange because there was a master bedroom that was clearly the master bedroom. And then there was another bedroom, but it didn't have a crib in it and it didn't have a changing table in it. And I thought this was strange. But I, at some point, for whatever reason, I decided, okay, you know, this is the hand I've been dealt, and I'm going to make this work. So first I had to change the baby, and to find a place to change was, you know, there was the dresser with the big mirror on it, knickknacks all over the thing, and I first cleared off all the knickknacks and put the baby down on top of it to change the baby. And that went fine, pajamas on, no problem.
Where were the diapers? Weren't the diapers someplace?
They were in the living room.
Okay.
For some reason. Anyways. Okay. So I have to decide where this baby is going to go to sleep. Because, again, it just doesn't quite click in my head that, yeah, it's strange that there's no nursery that I can find in this home. But, again, for whatever reason, I'm just like, well, we're going to do what we have to do with what we've got here. So the bed was a queen-size bed, and it had all of these books and things, like, stacked all over it. And so I decide, well, I'm going to clear a space and put the baby on the bed to sleep. So first I go around, and I move all the books and everything out to the edge of the bed, thinking, ooh, if the baby, the books will keep the baby from falling out of the bed, because we are responsible in my family. We try to do things the right way. Then I decide, no, the books, what if the baby like rolls into the books and the book comes falling down on the baby? No way. So then I take all everything and I like pile it up all the way around the bed. So now the bed is completely clear. I put the baby in the middle of the bed on its back and the baby promptly falls asleep and I go out to watch TV. A couple hours later, you know, the parents come back. Do you remember their names?
I don't.
That's all right. Doesn't matter. They come back, and I remember that I wasn't ashamed of what had happened. I wasn't scared that this family is going to find out. And it just kind of slipped my mind that I didn't tell them about what had happened with this baby, and I couldn't find the nursery in their own house. So they paid me, and everything went just fine, and I went right back across the street to the house, and it's about bedtime, so our family gets ready to go to sleep for the night.
And it's about, it was an early night. They were not that late. It was like 11, 11:30 at the latest. So Megan comes in, and they had watched her even cross the alley nice and safe, and she heads up to bed, and we close up the place, turn the lights off, and get ready to go to bed ourselves. And suddenly, there's this horrendous pounding on our back door and screaming. And we're like, what is going on? So we come back down and find the neighbors at the back door. Both of them are absolutely panicked. It's just sheer chaos. They're screaming at us, where is Matthew? And we're like... He's at your house. That's all we know. They're besides themselves. They just don't know what to do. So and they're so loud, and there's so much commotion. The lights are going on at all the other neighbors' houses too. So and what goes through your head at that point is like, well, who could have abducted this kid between the time? You know, I mean, it just didn't make sense. And wait a minute, Matthew can't walk. He can't. You know, he couldn't have left himself. He couldn't have rolled under the bed. Where is Matthew?
So all this is going on, and I'm still up in my room, like, getting ready to go to bed. And all of a sudden, I hear, Megan, come downstairs.
So there's five of us, four adults and Megan, headed across the alley, along with, at that point, probably about 10 other neighbors outside the door in their bathrobes, you know, trying to figure out what's going on. So we go to their back door, and we just waited at the door.
I'm like, you guys are crazy. What are you talking about? The baby's right here. So we go into what turned out to be the guest room, and sure enough, the baby's there, snoring away, perfectly happy. Nothing's wrong with the baby. But come to find out, there was a nursery in this house, okay? Now, I don't think I ever would have gotten this, because it's like you go up a couple steps and there was this door, and I swear to you it looked like a closet door. There is no way in hell that that door was the door to any normal nursery. And the father, whose name we've forgotten, you know, takes the baby, swooshes the baby into the nursery, and sure enough, there's the crib and there's the changing table and everything that was there. Needless to say, that was the last time they hired me to babysit.
But other neighbors did, so. Yeah.
And that was one of our favorite duo stories, with Megan Coven and her mother, Carrie Kafka, telling their neighbor story.
And as we mentioned last week, Leah, these topics and these stories hold up well over time, because the concept of relationships and things are pretty timeless.
Yeah.
And, you know, the characters may change and times may change, but the theme of the stories still hold up well, still very poignant.
Yeah.
Stories from Ex-Fabula tonight on WUWM every Wednesday night right after 9 o'clock. Leah comes in and does this with us, brings some cool stories with us. There's a new season starting in October, and I know you want to talk about Ex-Fabula memberships, because membership does have its privileges.
Yes, it does. And numeral one privilege, it helps our organization. But we have a lot of different benefits that we're offering this season for our membership. So get those renewed or just buy them in general. You can find the information at exfabula.com. One of the benefits is our... We have a Secret Fabula, which is a members-only storytelling series that we offer during the year. And this August 24th, this is why you need to get your memberships prior, August 24th, we are going to be outside at the Pitch Project Gallery, which is located on 5th Street in Walker's Point. And it's going to be in conjunction with Mike Brenner's Brewing Company.
Yeah,
so there'll be
that,
stories. Yeah. There'll be beer.
There will be beer.
There will be beer.
Important.
Yeah, exactly.
No, the stories will be great, and there will be beer. And it's a great new place.
Yes, sir. Yes.
We will check that out August 24th, right?
Yep.
All right. And the new season starting in October. They go to the website, xfabula.com, for more information on the upcoming season and the themes that are going to be selected. So looking forward to doing more of this, and we'll do that next week.
That sounds perfect.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Bruce.